what is happening, PGA DFS fans? Welcome to the PGA DFS First Look for the Zurich Classic. And I got to be honest, I'm surprised I'm sitting here in front of the camera talking about this week. But DraftKings is a public company now and decided to get their act together and find a way to match up all the players. We'll see. Salaries are going to drop in the next little bit. But it's the Zurich Classic. Definitely a different format this week. And we'll talk all about that. We'll talk about some of the unofficial world golf rankings that we just released here on awesome1.com. We'll match that up to some players and find some value here this week. But as we do each and every week on this show, we give a quick little review of last week. This week, we're going to go a little bit quicker too, since we've got some strategy to talk about for the upcoming one. But I want to bring Jeff in first because he's my trend guy. And I was, you know, just circumventing through Twitter this morning. And sure enough, there's Jeff finding a guy that talked about a trend that yet again hit and really provided some incredible value in the form of Stuart Sink. So, Jeff, welcome to the show. And why don't you tell people where you found it and what it was?
Yeah, so no, the Stuart Sink trend came from Dave Tindall Golf, at Dave Tindall Golf on Twitter. A guy who does great work. He's been in the betting scene for a while. He just tweeted out something early in the week. You know, you look at Stuart Sink's record basically after majors. It's incredible. He's, five of his wins have come after a major, including two at the RBC Hilton. It's really simple, but then you take a look at what he did in the majors before those wins, and he just had good weeks. So basically what Stuart Sink is a guy who takes confidence from a good showing at a major championship and turns them into wins, and it happened again. And look, I think some of this has to do with the course and stuff as well. Hilton Head brings different styles in. It gives veterans like Stuart Sink a chance to win. You just look at the winners of Hilton Head at Hilton Head over the last 10 years. You'll see what I mean. But at the same time, you know, great detective work by him. Again, it's at Dave Tilton Golf on Twitter. And yeah, just a cool trend. I like stuff like that, again, like you alluded to. So I didn't get in on it, but it was cool to see. It was interesting to see nonetheless. I just don't think I could have made myself bet on Stuart Sink getting two wins in 6 months. Even if I had seen this trend before, Jason, I honestly wouldn't have played it. So,
Jeff, you're not the only one that couldn't foresee two wins from Stuart Sink in a six-month pan. I can promise you that. I will say, though, his game is completely transformed.
Oh, absolutely. It's great. Yeah.
Hitting the ball so further. He's 47, Max. He's going to be eligible to play with Phil Mickelson in 3 years. The guy
he's better than Phil.
It seems like at this stage of their life, he's better than Phil. What is going on? How has this resurgence happened for a 47-year-old here?
I have no idea, but whatever he's doing, people should emulate it. Like he's
driving. Well, I can tell you one thing that he is doing. He is using the decade system, which, again, if you guys are into golf, follow at Scott Fawcett on Twitter. I mean, it's proven to be revolutionary for Zalatoris and here now Zink. But Max, I mean, that seems like such a small thing to be able to do to get these guys playing at an incredible level.
Yeah, I mean, he can compete in the majors like with guys like DJ and, you know, like Rom, because he drives it so long. So all these old guys, really, their only problem is they don't hit it far. So in long courses, they can't really compete. But this guy can. Like, he hits it a mile. And like he's up there in par five scoring, which you never see from from older guys. It's great. Like his game is awesome. And he's a guy I play all the time. His putter just usually doesn't show up. And he looked really sketchy on some putts this week. But, you know, it came through for him just because his ball striking was so excellent.
Yeah, he had a couple of head fakes, a couple of double pumps. I'm not going to lie, with a putter that looked quite interesting. And certainly if I saw him on the docket this week, I would probably be betting the under in terms of birdie mates. But listen, it's a double week, so we're going to have some interesting props certainly to look at. And I wouldn't be talking about props if I wasn't talking about Monkey Knife Fight, the sponsor of our show here. Thank you to them for that. Their player props-based contest are really easy to understand. They're easy to compete in. You don't have to have the time commitment and worry about ownership and all of that. Check out monkeyknifefight.com. Check out all their props-based contests for this week. I'm sure they'll have one for the Zurich. It is early on in the week. Normally, they're posted right around 2 or 3 o'clock, so stay tuned for those. And, of course, upon your first sign-up, use promo code AWESOMO, and it's a $50 match, dollar-by-dollar match, up to $50. Sorry about that. Use promo code AWESOMO on that. Oh, it's up to $100 now. I'm getting told behind the scenes. So look at that. We love to hear it. Check out monkeyknifefight.com. Jeff, as we move along, last week at the RBC, we saw again pretty low scoring. The average was a 10.4x if you made the cut last week as we move into our DFS review. But there are two names. Again, of course, Stewart Cink had a great week. Maverick McNeely was there as well. But as we move down the little bit, I wanted to bring up two names that we continually see when they make the cut. Sam Burns and Doug Gim. Again, 11x on the value. Now, maybe I'm like cherry picking a little bit, but when the guys make the cut, they score. Is that a way you play them, or do you try to avoid them in, say, your biggest lineups and only play them in GPPs? What do you do with guys like that that are so volatile, but when they play, they score?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you necessarily need to avoid them in certain formats. You know, again, like even in cash games, you should be emphasizing upside really in your lineups. I mean, yeah, you want consistency as well, but it's not like these guys are missing like 70% of their cuts as well. So, you know, Burns was on a bit of a bad streak, but I mean, every golfer is going to go through that. I'd throw Cam Davis in that group of three right there.
Yeah, exactly. He literally is the next guy down below Burns.
On Saturday. Cam Davis is just like, you know, again, you can almost throw things like course fit out with these guys. I mean, they're just good ball strikers, good at making birdies. And when they get confident with the putter, like they're going to pay off when they're at that salary. So you know, I had a little bit of Burns and Davis mixed in. I you know, regret not using more Gim as well, but yeah, good values. Definitely guys who, especially when the conditions are like that, like we saw last week, the wind was down a little bit. You know, maybe you don't have to target them at like grind it out US Open style events, but we really don't get those that often anyways. So yeah, these guys are just great DFS plays, especially when their price is depressed. You know, when Sam Burns is like 9K, sure, you can probably fade them. But when they're down there in the low 7K range, they're great values.
Well, I think I really think that's one of the most important notes about that is looking at their price and their price relative to what they can score, right? That's kind of the key. So, Max, a couple of other guys that I wanted to bring up. One kind of maybe off the wall, I'll say a little bit, which is Wes Bryan. Wes Bryan and RBC Heritage, certainly a real thing. But maybe more to a relevant note, because not many people were going to get to Wes Bryan last week. Plenty of people got to Emiliano Grillo. He was actually a very popular play among the pros. We'll see when we go through. For the public, not that much owned, but this guy, Coastal Track, set up easy off the tee. It's all about approach game, and he looked comfortable with the putter. So really great week from Grillo.
Yeah, absolutely. Short courses too, because he doesn't really hit it as far as most guys his age. So shorter courses, Coastal Tracks, he's awesome on those. So, and those usually come with a little bit shorter fields. Not this week. We had some good guys in the field this week, but this guy can really compete. And I was kind of sad for him. Just because Stewart Cink played so out of his mind with back-to-back 63s, you know, Grillo just couldn't catch him. But Grillo played well enough to win. Probably the best I've ever seen him, and really going to keep an eye on him because he's always had the talent.
He sure has. And, Jeff, as I bring you in here, I want to talk about ownership for a second. Okay. This is the first week that I've done this show with you, and we've been doing it for over a year, that the top 10 owned golfers in the slate all made the cut. Not only did they all make the cut, they all came inside the top 32. It was chalk week last week. 6 of 6 was like 20%. Gonna make it really tough if you didn't have it.
Yeah, absolutely. it just makes me feel worse for playing a couple guys like Fleetwood and Cantlay. But you know, again, the Hilton Head, it's just one of those courses too, where the birdies, when the weather's down, like the birdies are so easy to come by here. So when the chalk makes the cut, you know, we like the chalk because they're good players, right? Like chalk is chalk for a reason. So when the chalk is all making the weekend, typically they're going to pay off because we like them as plays. So, you know, I, again, not really shocked to see it once I saw the names that made the cut and the type of course it was, because the birdies were going to be out there. Again, these guys all have higher birdie rates. Those are kind of the reasons we like them. So, yeah, this event is same thing happened here last year. You know, all the big guys made the cut. DJ and Brooks all had like big last rounds, and everybody ended up paying off. So very similar. Reminded me of last year, just with a few lesser names. And that's just kind of the style that RBC Hilton is going to play when there's no weather, because that venue is just – that's really its only defense right now for the pros.
And they made it even easier before the Webb Simpson win, they made it even easier than it was. Now, granted, before it actually played as a relatively hard event, but certainly the changes definitely helped it, and the no win the last couple of years. So, Max, as we move into the optimal lineup, I wanted to ask you, even with all the chalk making the cut, the optimal was $46,100 total salary. Is there any correlation between the two there, or is it just that Maverick McNealy got ridiculous with the putter and that really was the difference?
It's so funny because I actually looked at him before the tournament because he's another one that just destroys short tracks, which you wouldn't pick a guy that hits it far. So, yeah, I mean, this is just a weird week. Like, if you have St. Grillo and McNealy as your three top scoring options, yeah, I mean, the outfit is going to be 46K and no one's going to be on it. So it is what it is. But, yeah, I mean, these chalk weeks, like, you really need guys that make birdies in bunches. So, like,
David, Sam Burns were actually very good targets in that range that exactly. We just mentioned. Yeah.
You couldn't predict the win, really. Like, the win laying down over the weekend really helped the scoring. If it played, like, the first round played a little bit tough, even though Sink went nuts, it was just really him and Cam Smith. The first couple of rounds were whatever. But
they were actually good rounds. I thought it was setting up to be a pretty good tournament, but with no wind, I knew
no wind on the weekend killed it. And, like, no wind in the Hilton Head is just so weird. The last 2 years have been just strange.
No, it really is. I visited there once, and it wasn't below 15 to, you know, miles per hour the entire time I was there, which exactly. Is fine. You kind of want that when you're on the island, you know. It's a good breeze.
It's hot.
They got none of that this week. So, all right, I think we can move along to the top GPP lineup. And user Jen_Luzy. 5 needs to change it to Jen wins everything 5 because that is what I'm going to guess a she. I apologize if it's not a she, but I'm going to guess a she did last week. The lineup left $500 in salary and rostered Dustin Johnson and got Dustin Johnson in a winning GPP lineup. I'm shocked about pretty much all of it, but only 71% total ownership. You got to love that. Jeff, any comments about the lineup?
I mean, you know, just to comment again, like, I know at the start of last week, I was telling people, like, you could make lineups with everyone in the 7K range and still, like, produce good lineups last week. That's just kind of the event I thought it was going to be. Now, I didn't say those specific players, like, I wasn't talking about those guys. So it's not like I was on it that hard. But again, man, I mean, you know, obviously this user really liked Stuart Sink, as I think we'll find out, HV3. So I don't know, man. I mean, it's just good job. I like the construction from the ownership perspective. Look, I think we all like Grillo. That was a sharp play. You know, getting up to DJ, at least, you know, DJ outperformed a lot of the higher priced guys. So, again, obviously the person just had a really hard line on a couple of the lower values, which just went absolutely nuts in HV3 and Stuart Sink. And you know what? It was a week to play the lower owned guys in terms of the value plays instead of like the really popular ones. So I don't know. It's one of those weeks where I just assumed this person had a really hot line on a couple plays and it just paid off. I don't really have anything else to add except that.
Max, listen, I get the Sink play. I really do. I was overweight and Sink in my GPP pool, but he was paired with like Adam Hadwin every lineup. So it didn't matter. But so a bunch of min caches is what that basically resulted in. But this user Jen, Harold Varner, like, granted, I know he's a Carolina guy, North Carolina guy. I mean, that's where he grew up. I get all that. He went to East Carolina. I mean, I'm trying to find the relevance. Maybe he'd been playing a little bit better. I think he had maybe 4 or 5 cuts in a row. So maybe it was easy to get to him as maybe like a 20% owned. But as we'll see, out of the 20 lineups, Harold Varner was at 15 of 20. What? Where does this come from?
I mean, she's from the future.
Clearly. I guess that's all we can say.
That's the only thing I can say. I mean, HV3, like, I play him on courses with no wind because he's not very good in wind. He hits the ball really high. And on courses with a bunch of short par fours because he's like the king of the short par four. So, I mean, I don't know. That's the only two angles that I could see with HV3. I didn't play him this week. I thought the wind would be there all week. And he struggles on coastal courses, actually. Yeah. So
just not this week.
I just didn't see the angle for it this week, but I mean, glad it worked out.
I mean, no, HV3, just to, not to belabor the point, but
yeah,
dude is either like T4 or like misses the cut by like eight strokes. So I guess that's always the argument with him. If you knew the weather was going to be down, definitely like 2% ownership. Not bad. I wouldn't have put him in 75% of my laps, but you could definitely make a case for making like some room for him, I guess.
For sure. All right, let's go into the pro review and see if I was the only pro not to get on Harold Varner this week. And I'm going to go on a limb and say not many others did either, as we start off with our own Alex Osmo-Baker, who of the panel of three pros that I did review this week, he scored the most points with 566 out of his player pool, which had Will Zalatoris as the top owned at 32%. I like that top ownership from Alex. Dan Berger and DJ at 25%. The trap of Tommy Fleetwood at 22%. Corey Connors, Ty Hatton. The Patrick Cantlay trap, and then pretty good bottom half. Fitzpatrick, Griot, Simpson, Sungjae Im, and Billy Horschel all around the top 10. So a pretty good player pool. Top lineup came in 99th. Alex used 79 players last week, roughly what I used. So it seemed for that type of event, seemed maybe a little high, but it really wasn't. Six players owned over 20%, four in the top 10, but the two missed cuts, Max. I mean, you and I both fell into the same trap, too. I wasn't as high on Cantlay. I told you I really felt like he was lost, but I still got 10%, of course, because I'm not going to have zero. But those were the only two misses for Alex, really.
Yeah, for me as well. Those guys, I just – with Cantlay, like, missing the cut at the Masters, and he had a pretty good second round. Like, the second round wasn't as bad as the first. And he's another one that really popped for me on a shorter tracks – you know, with a bunch of par fours there that are pretty scoreable. And he's like the king of the par four scoring. I don't know. I was on him. And it didn't work out. Fleetwood, I would do again in a million times. I mean, he was -9, I believe, or -10 on 26 holes. And then was just like +8 on his other 12 holes. So it is what it is. Kind of lost his mind on the back nine in the first round. No idea what happened there, but I would play Fleetwood again. I think you and I were talking, he would have scored 100 points if he played the weekend.
For sure would have. He started off his round. I mean, everything was going the way that it should have. Yeah. Now, Jeff, when we go to mine, I ended up with Ty Hatton as my top owned in this. I made 270 lineups and put him in both $5. So I only took the $5 $300K guaranteed one. This is how it ended up being. The overall percentage in the 270 is a little bit lower, but regardless, Ty Hatton was in 38%, Simpson 37%, Zalatoris 36%, Morikawa and Fitzpatrick both at 30%. So I built around those five guys. They all made the cut. They all played well. Wouldn't you think I would have had a better shot to profit this week given the player pool? Because I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, you even have exposure to Grillo, who is one up there as well, but it's just a tough week if you didn't have the right scoring players. Again, with these lower scoring events, you know, you think you get a few studs across the line. Maybe you avoid a few busts, but like you need the guys who are making the birdies on the weekend. Again, like those Cam Davises, you got to get worked in. Sink, obviously, Sink had some ownership. It wasn't like he was like
7 or 8%. Right? Yeah.
Though when the chalk hits, like you've got to get the right exposure. It's not just about getting guys through the cut. The one thing I'll say is again, we're just getting more reminder here that like, regardless of Webb Simpson's price, you know, at this event, you should probably just play him. So that's the only thing. I mean, obviously you took that advice and deployed it well, but yeah, a guy like Hadwin really hurt me as well. We saw Fleetwood in the other one. It didn't make up like huge amounts of people's players pool, but those hurt more when the chalk is flying like that. So.
Yeah, and our buddy Tokyo Swan in the chat is letting me know that I had 20% Hadwin, which was way too much, and it definitely
Hadwin is another guy who
was a good play, but
like a 9-hole stretch where it was like, what are you doing, buddy? And then he made a bunch of birdies and he didn't make it back. But
of course, he reeled me in, right? Because he went birdie eagle on Friday. He was five over, and he went birdie eagle, and I'm like, ooh, all right, we got a chance here. Same thing with Tommy Fleetwood. Like, legitimate same thing with Tommy Fleetwood gave me all the feels on Friday afternoon, but not to be, Max. As we move on, our last pro we're going to take a look at Forsaken or Downside of Me on Twitter. Also, Colin Morikawa as the top owned. Wow, I'm actually going to have to say something to Jesse about that one. Doesn't typically play Morikawa, but was the top owned. Simpson Casey was the downfall there. The only pro to find Paul Casey this week. So also found Sergio Garcia Dade was the only pro to find Harold Varner, but because of the high ownership to Paul Casey and Sergio Garcia, was not able to score as many as myself or as many as Osma last week. Still not that bad. I think 540 points, still a losing week. Not bad. But Max, let's move on to Jen's player pool now. Just incredible. So she made 20 lineups, or they made 20 lineups. 80% of them had Stuart Sink. 70% of them had Harold Varner. Then, okay, maybe 55% DJ and Berger. Then you had 40% Fitzpatrick, 30% Grillo and Streelman. Everybody in the top five, everybody that scored well. Just whatever Jen does, just follow what she does next week.
Yeah, I mean, when you get the, you know, the top three guys, it doesn't really matter who you put around them as long as they make the weekend, right? Like, DJ is going to score well as long as he makes the weekend. Fitzpatrick should not have scored well. I hated that play all week. Everybody was on him. He's like 40% on high stakes.
It's unbelievable.
And then, of course, he gains like 8 strokes putting.
Of course.
Yeah, it is what it is. Like, he actually lost strokes in approach and just like broke even off the tee. So he really shouldn't have been up there. But when you make every 15 footer, it doesn't really matter.
It really, it really doesn't.
So yeah, I mean, I love her player pool. Like, I want her to teach me what got her onto HV3, because that is a play I would make every time if I knew it was going to work out.
Now, Jeff, I will say, in 20 entry contests, so that let me rephrase. In 20 entry contests, I would be fine sticking to my normal player pool. However, if I was only entering 20 lineups into a mass energy PP, this is the way I would have to do it, because you need to gain the most leverage. You're already starting with less lineups, right? So love the strategy. You and I talk about that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, you know, we're obviously, you know, having a little bit of fun with like low end plays and going this heavy. But again, yeah, you have to take it in context. I mean, this user obviously only had 20 lineups. And like I said, if you are really truly going for upside, going heavier on a guy like HV3 makes sense. I don't know about 15 lineups or Stuart Sink 20, but that's obviously really aggressive. You don't necessarily have to get that aggressive, but you know, definitely getting a little bit aggressive with a couple plays makes a ton of sense. And I agree. This is, you know, somewhere along the lines of what I would be looking to do. Again, maybe on a slightly less aggressive scale with probably maybe different players, but you know, again, HV3, we talked about, he's got a ton of upside. So, you know, if he's going to hit, it's going to be in a birdie, an event where the birdies are flying. So yeah, really interesting week for sure. I'm not shocked that a player pool like this came through, just because of obviously the leaderboard that we had on Sunday. So it is interesting. It's kind of cool to see someone who took this aggressive approach, went with a lot of low end plays, have a payoff. I kind of like it. I mean, you know, I've made this move before, and if you hit it on the right weeks, man, like it can absolutely pay off for you. So
for those of you that are only doing 20 lineups in a max enter contest, again, I love the dispersion that happened here. It gives it for almost optimal leverage, of course, given the fact that you're already starting behind the eight ball. 29 golfers still use those. So still a good amount of golfers used in those 20 lineups. In fact, probably a little bit more than I'd recommend, but heck, it didn't matter last week, obviously. But here's the last note I'll mention. Of the 20 lineups, ready? First, fifth, ninth, 38th, 42nd, 66th twice, 126th, 132nd twice, 153, 178, and 215. All of the 20 in the top 215 lineups. Absolutely incredible. It was really something that I've never seen before. But now I'm done talking about it. But before we do, why don't we give a couple of likes, just in case Jen happens to tune into this contest. Let's give her a couple of likes here. And of course, make sure you subscribe to our channel so you get notified when we've got some live stuff going on. And of course, my pre-recorded videos that I do each and every week, as does Ben and Josh. Get into it as well. So best way to know when those come due is by subscribing. So, okay, let's move into our lineup review here, where I had a better week in my higher dollar stuff. I will say I went 2 for 2 cashing in the 500. My main lineup, though, it was legitimately 200 of 203 on the cash line. And it was basically the cash line in every single contest. Will Zalatoris, Ty Hatton, Fitzpatrick, McIntyre, Gim, and Neesmith. Max, everything panned out the way that I thought, to be honest. But the one thing, if I could have changed, was to have Bobby McIntyre remember how to play golf on Sunday, because
Yeah, that was strange, right?
Yeah, wow. And that really hurt. I think I would have won a couple more $100. I would have gotten in the cash in every contest had he played well on Sunday.
Yeah, that was strange to see, especially because everybody kind of had a good round.
Like, yeah,
I think the average was under par. So, like, what do you shoot, plus eight or plus nine?
It was bad. Seven over. Yeah,
it was very bad. I kind of have seen him do this before. At the tournament that replaced the Mexico this year, he kind of just tends to lose the mind with a putter because his ball striking is okay no matter what.
Yep.
But when he loses his mind with a putter, it snowballs quick. So yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't play him last week, so I'm not sure what exactly happened. But that would be my guess.
Jeff, not a bad structure. I didn't know Matt Fitzpatrick was going to be 75% owned in the higher dollar stuff, but I still found ways to differentiate through McIntyre. Gim and Neesmith were about the same owned as Sink. Obviously, I would have loved to go down to Sink instead of Neesmith, hindsight. But I will say Sink was my next guy below 7,000 that I played. He was in my $200 lineup, but I also put him with JT Poston and Sebastian Munoz, who missed the cut. So it didn't matter, obviously, having Sink in that lineup. Everything pretty much went the way that I thought. Maybe Zalatoris didn't position himself well, but he scored well the last week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I like the targeting. The higher birdie rate guys like Neesmith and Gim made a ton of sense. McIntyre, obviously, I think he probably just had a little bit of burnout after the Masters in the final round. So, yeah. Like Max said, I mean, he's a dude who you go off the rails a little bit when things get going bad, like some of these other Euro guys tend to do. But Hatton was good value up there in the 9K range. Hatton and Berger, I thought, were a little bit underrated this week. I didn't expect Fitzpatrick to be this popular either. I played him, but so maybe I should have. Everyone was thinking the same, right? I mean, he's 9K. He's just a little bit too cheap. He always gains on Bermuda, which he did again. So, again, nothing with your lineup construction. Just, didn't quite get the scoring from the bottom tier guys. Like you said, getting Sink in there obviously would have been awesome. But, man, you just need to be so perfect with those lower tier pit plays in the 7K range this week, because that's where the difference was made.
Sure was. And Max, you were in your base lineup a lot closer to Stuart Sink than I was, given the fact that you decided to play Chase Seifert over him, which I know you're probably kicking yourself a little bit on, but that wasn't what cost you the big dollars. It was obviously Patrick Cantlay.
I don't know. I followed him the first two rounds. And honestly, it was like Jason Day all over again at the Masters.
It was.
It's just hitting it in places you can't hit it.
We'd never think he would hit it either.
Right, exactly. Like, his driving was actually okay. The irons were really not good.
Poor.
Yeah, and, the couple times that he did hit it close, he just missed the putts.
what a surprise.
Yeah.
Great combo.
He kind of looks a little bit broken, like you said on last week's show, where he just doesn't look like the same guy after his withdrawal. And all right, I'm buying into it now. Maybe he had COVID or whatever, and he hasn't recovered.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
then there's also the girlfriend rumor going around. Oh, you've heard this one, right?
Oh,
no.
Stop it, Jason. What is it?
The rumor on the street is that he's having problems off of the golf course.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Girlfriend, man. Always the girlfriend.
We got a girlfriend. We got COVID. We are searching on this program for what is wrong with you, Mr. Cantlay. Please figure it out soon, because we're all big backers.
Yeah,
that's all I can really say on that. He is going to be playing this week, though, at the Zurich Classic, and he's playing with one of the best players in the field. So maybe his problems will be a little bit masked this week. Maybe they'll find a way to get him on the tee ball instead of on the iron game, as that's what's been struggling. But before we move on, I want to tell you guys a little bit about the free content we've got on Osmo today. For NBA, going to get ownership percentages. Love that. NHL, you're going to get that as well. And for MLB, the player rankings, all free. So some great pieces of content. But if you're ready to join us on the Osmo Plus side, the great community we have here, you're going to get access to all of the great tools and content for nearly every DFS sport out there with an Osmo Plus weekly pass. Just $29.95 for that. That includes full access to the premium content and tools on Osmo.com, including player projections, ownership projections, Slack channel, lineup builder, and so much more. If you're just looking to join the three of us, Ben, and a couple more guys, of course, Eric, on our PGA DFS team, Then sign up for Osmo Plus PGA Weekly Package, just $8.95. So start winning. Stop guessing. Start winning and join Osmo Plus today. All right, let's move on to Zurich now, where it is a team event. We are waiting, I'm guessing, within the next couple of minutes. We're waiting for DFS salaries to drop. At the end of the show, if we don't have them, we're going to tell you what they're going to be by our guesses. But before we do that, it is 82-man teams here this week. 20 of the world's top 50 are here, a couple in the top 10 as well. This tournament has been a team event since 2017, the last regular showing, or the time that we actually cared about the event as PGA DFS fans was in 2016 with the Brian Stewart win. Since then, though, it's been pretty random winners, except for last year when we got the John Rahm, Ryan Palmer chalk win. Other than that, it's been like Cameron Smith and Jonas Blix. What's up, Jeff? Where's Jonas Blix now?
Gosh, I was going to look that up this morning. He's not in the field. Cam Smith playing with Mark Leishman this year.
Makes more sense.
And I started to think, like, I haven't seen Jonas Blix even like in the Korn Ferry Tour event lately. No. So I don't know. Maybe he's injured or retired. I'm going to have to look that up later. But yeah, we don't need to worry about him this week. But yeah, the you know, two of the winners, you know, Cam Smith, Jonas Blix, I think they were off in like the 50 to 60 to 1 range when they win. Scott Percy and Billy Horschel, kind of a similar range. Kind of that mid-tier range, guys who just come in like decent players and just kind of gotten hot on the greens for a week. And then last year you had, obviously, Rahm just went nuts with Ryan Palmer, who's another elite ball striker. So we've kind of seen a mix. Again, realistically, the top players have not really done well at this event. Like the top groupings, we always get these superstar, oh, you know, like Henrik Stenson and Justin Rose were playing together back when they were both good. And everyone's like, wow, this is going to be impossible to beat. And they only like four birdies the whole week or something. So, you know, it's been more of an event for like those mid-tier guys to kind of really shine through.
Yeah, there certainly is, Max. Again, this is going to probably be the first week that you're looking into this tournament, I'd assume. What's your first initial impressions of having to pick a team rather than just one guy?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because whenever you see like a good player, he's paired with a guy that you would never play. Like Colin Morikawa is playing with broken Matty Wolf. Why? You know, neither of them can.
Because that might Colin Morikawa might be Matt Wolf's only friend on the PGA Tour right now. I don't know.
It's bad. Like you saw the pictures of him after the Masters. I just feel sad for the guy.
I do too. It doesn't look good.
Luke List is playing with Bo Van Pelt.
What's up with that one? That's as weird as like Keith Mitchell playing with John Daly 2 years ago. Like what?
It gets stuff happening.
There's some other random ones, and I wonder, and I know this to be true, that if you didn't have a partner, which you are allowed to pick your partner, if you didn't have a partner, you were randomly assigned one. But Jeff, you gotta think that like Luke List has gotta have at least one buddy that he'd rather play with over Bo Van Pelt this week.
So it's weird though. The friendships that are formed, like you hear about it at this event. This is like the big gossip. It's like, oh, this guy's friends with this dude. Like we didn't know that. And all of a sudden, you know, they're playing. So I don't know. Maybe there is a connection there with List and Van Pelt. I have no idea yet, but that was one of the ones that jumped out to me. There's definitely probably a couple other ones we could pick through here, but yeah.
Yeah. It's like Danny Berger and Luke Donald were hanging out last week. It's like one of those, like what? I would never put those two in the same room together.
So yeah. You're going to get some weird pairings for sure.
Sure are. All right, let's talk about TPC Louisiana. I feel like it's a broken record here at this time of the year that we're talking about Peter Dye yet again. Here's the thing. We were talking about this before the show. Peter Dye has a very distinct way of making golf courses, designing golf courses. It's, I'm going to challenge you off the tee, and if you put it in play, I'm going to give you a chance to score. This golf course is absolutely no different than even Harbortown last week, or certainly TPC Sawgrass. Par 72, 7,500 yards, four par fives. Again, like I said, Max, it is on paper, very similar to Sawgrass.
Yeah, it's going to be a birdie fest, right? Like, unless the weather intervenes somehow, and apparently there's a bunch of rain, so it's going to play.
Yeah, it's super soft right now in this part of the country. So,
yeah, it's just going to be another variance fest with putting, I think. The greens are super small. So if you get it on the green, you're going to have a birdie putt.
Yep.
And it's just whoever makes the most birdies. Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to last week. The same kind of guys pop here. That's why the top guys usually don't win here, is because, you know, a random dude gets hot with a putter and it's over. So yeah, it's one of those where it's going to be a variance fest, but we have a golf tournament to prepare for and try and figure out who's going to win. So We take on the challenge no matter what.
We sure do. And Jeff, I will say about Peter Dye, I want to say something positive. Now, those things that I said before may not have been negative. They're just maybe not construed as the most positive. One thing I will say, the way he designs his courses for the aspect of viewing a golf tournament is like nothing else. TPC Sawgrass is the best venue to watch a golf tournament. And he designed TPC Louisiana very similarly. Back in 2004, the course was basically designed for this event that's been held in the area for a while. Obviously, it is in the bayou, so during Katrina, they couldn't use it, which obviously makes sense. But in that aspect, it's fun, but that doesn't help us in determining who's going to win the golf tournament.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you've got pretty easy to hit fairways and easy to hit greens, like even for a Peter Dye course. So this event, it always sees some weather packed in as well. It is kind of a fun course. Like there's a drivable par four coming down the stretch on the 16th, and it's not like an easy, easy drivable par four. So that's one of the nice things about it. The par fives typically are just, the guys can just eat them up though. So you'll see like quite a few eagles here, obviously, but it's one of those things, even with the par fives being a big thing, like you don't necessarily have to be a big bomber here to take advantage of them. Again, we see Kevin Kisner, Scott Brown come here and just light it up every year. Smith and Blixt, obviously not two big hitters. So again, I don't want to say it's more about placement, but it's really just more about what you do from within, like your second shot in, you know, what you do around the greens. Can you sink those 15 to 20 foot birdie putts? And you typically have a higher sinking of said birdie putts in the 20 foot range here than normal courses. So, you know, typically easier to putt greens as well, which I think helps the really good putters. I think it just lets them get hot, and it's kind of proven itself out around over time too. So yeah, like you guys said, it's going to play a lot like last week. It really is, I think. And a little bit of wet weather, probably just going to make the course easy.
Sure is. And let's talk about some teams coming up. But before we do, I want to tell you guys about the amazing weekend that a lot of our Osmo Plus members had. I've been getting tweets left and right since last night. I saw somebody took down the 50K flop shot, won the secondary contest there, and had an amazing lineup. Saw somebody took down the 50 cent mini max contest with the best lineup created all week by anybody. Wow. So really amazing stuff going on. We love to hear those successes. That's why we do this, of course, to be able to help you guys. And of course, check out our Osmo Hall of Fame. That's where we retweet all of the success that we have going on. And it's great. Really good to be part of the community. Really fun to see all of the successes. So please keep doing that and keep winning. And a couple of guys that are going to help you win maybe this week. Well, you know what? First, I'm going to start with my nostalgia or my I can't miss out first click. And Max, it's Dougie Gim and Justin Su. You put my two guys together. They've got to be friends. I'm pretty sure they are. They graduated college same time, went to college same time. So I'm pretty sure they're friends.
I'm sure they're friends. Yeah.
But they're like 70 to one. What? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Use the Osmo unofficial world golf rankings, and they've actually got one of the most combined rankings out there. Jeff, did you see that number and say, I can't click it? Or did you say, I can't miss it like I did?
It's pretty interesting, right? I knew you'd be all over this. And yeah, as you should be. I mean, these guys are like, we're talking about, oh, it's going to be a birdie fest. We're just talking about how many birdies Doug Gim makes. And then you've got a terrific putter in Justin Su. That's kind of like the strength of his game around the greens and stuff. This is a really interesting pairing. It's easily, you know, the one I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, when you're looking down for value in the 50K range, there is another team I like almost as much though. And that's Roberto Castro and Cameron Tringali. And that's, again, it's the complete opposite of Justin Su and Doug Gim. You've got two veteran players, guys who played this course before, but coming in with solid form. I just, you know, you look at the history of this event, it's been these veterans who just like come here, they get confident. They just kind of get their way around this easy course and they sink a ton of putts. So similar to what Sink did last week, I like both these teams for completely different reasons. But yeah, I think for DFS especially, the Gim Su one has got a lot of upside, doesn't it? For sure.
It does. Max, I got one more to pitch to you. I think you're going to like this. This guy has teamed up with somebody different the first 2 years of this and hasn't been in great form in each of them. Came in 18th and 22nd. I should say the 2 years he's competed.
Okay.
Now he's teaming up with a guy that actually looks like he's in really good form. It's Graham McDowell and Matt Wallace.
Yeah.
McDowell's just a guy that keeps the ball in play for alternate shot, and Wallace is a guy that can light it up with the putter. So I really like this team this week. and Ryder Cup implications, of course, for Wallace. I think McDowell's probably a little far out, maybe for a vice captain, though, or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like the Hatton Willett team is going to get like all the buzz. Loving that.
Yeah.
And I actually like the Wallace and McDowell team better for scoring anyway. Like, Terrell Hatton is awesome, right? But I like him on hard courses where he's going to just like grind out pars and make birdies on holes that you don't expect him to make birdies.
Except for majors. We're not going to play Ty Hatton in majors still, right? No, or no. Did he show us at the Masters enough?
Maybe not.
Yeah.
You
can play him in Showdown.
Good deal.
Because he's going to have one good round where he just lights it up. I don't know if he can put four rounds together yet. And he still has like anger issues like John Rahm used to have.
You can absolutely bet on Ty Hatton having a club throw. This is he starts off birdie on Sunday, right? So, pretty good start. Middle of the fairway on three, and just duck hooks his iron shot, and the club is gone before the ball is even close to the green. I mean, he just knows it's not going close. But I love him for it.
He's so fun. Yeah. He's really fun to watch. But as far as like keeping your head cool in a major, I don't know if we're there just yet. He's still young. Like, he'll be there. I'm not worried about him.
Yeah, he'll get there.
I love that team for sure. And Wallace is just playing out of his mind. Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, that's definitely a nice sleeper.
The McDowell-Wallace one makes a ton of sense because you got the hot putter and the guy who's just hot in general. And McDowell should keep – because Wallace is a fiery guy too. So McDowell should keep
him. Yeah.
That's another mid-range one I really like.
What about Mav McNeely and Joey Bramlett? My guys.
They are two of your guys. And here's the thing I like about this team, though, and I've got another one similar, is that you've got McNeely, who can't miss a putt.
Yeah, exactly.
And you got Bramlett, who can't make a putt.
Yeah.
And he's amazing with 2-degree. Joey Bramlett is like, I think, fifth in the field 2-degree. So that's crazy. And you pair, like, I like those pairings where one guy can't putt, another guy is great 2-degree. Like, another one of these is Keith Mitchell on Snedeker.
Yes, that was mine. Yes.
Yeah. Because one guy that just hits it far, good with his irons, and another guy that's known as one of the best putters in the world. Yeah. So, yeah, like these two teams where you combine the different assets, I think, work really well.
Jeff, got another team like that, or you like those two teams that Max just brought up?
I think of the ones we were just talking about, I like the Snedeker-Mitchell one the most. We know Brant Snedeker can just go.
And he's hot right now, too.
Yeah,
he is. You have to go nuts in this event to win. I mean, teams are getting like 27 under par, right? You need those hot rounds. You need that putter to just go nuts. I think Snedeker could be a great influence on a guy like Keith Mitchell, who's typically like a good Bermuda putter as well. Well, better Bermuda putter. So it's a good setup for that pairing. I really like that pairing down there. The other one I'll throw out, I actually hit this one up. I can't remember if we talked about Peter Uihlein before the show or just at the start of it, but Peter Uihlein coming off a Korn Ferry Tour win. He's a really strong putter too, and he's paired with Richie Wierenski. Wierenski's played here a bunch. This is the first time they're paired together, but Uihlein's a hot putter. He's confident. This is a former number one amateur player in the world, and we know Wierenski comes to life in these weaker field events. Yeah. So I kind of like that pairing down there as well. That was the other one that stuck out. Again, I like where you guys' heads are at. We want to target these guys who can go a little bit nuts on the greens with these more confident ball strikers and see if we can get like magic to happen. So.
Just seeing a field update, I got a message on Twitter from somebody. I did not see this, and I'm bringing it up because I think this actually might be a really dangerous team. When I was going through the notes last night, I saw Joel Damon with Ryan Brehm, but Brehm withdrew.
Yeah.
And Lanto Griffin was a late ad. Obviously, Lanto Griffin has more status than Brehm, so I don't know what the story is there, but Damon is now with Griffin, and they're coming in at 50-1, one of the lowest odds of the tournament, so... Jeff, what do you make of that team? I only bring that up because I didn't even know they were teammates until just now.
Yeah, no, two guys who can light it up on their own, right? Yep. Really good scores. You just got to make sure Joel Damon's over his hangover by now. But I think at those odds, you're getting the right price to take a shot. So that's a really good price for this team. That's the long and the short of it. I would have expected they'd be closer to 40-1, quite frankly. Those are two strong players. Like, you just look at the odds right now. You've got Chris Kirk and Brendan Todd at plus 2,500. I like that team. There's not a chance in hell I'm betting them at plus 2,500 when Damon and Griffin are plus 6,000. So.
Yeah, I don't know if the books may have taken like a little Stuart Sink hit, Max, but 6-1 on John Rahm and Ryan Palmer to win this event seems outrageous. What do you make of that? Yeah, and then Cantlay Schauffele is like 6.5-1, which again seems outrageous.
Yeah, like Xander and Cantlay, I'm not even gonna touch them in DFS, much less bet them. Like, it just, they don't complement each other's games really. And I just don't see it. Like, Cantlay, we just talked about, feels a little broken. Xander tends to get bored in these events where they're like not one of the top events. So if it doesn't really show up, I definitely wouldn't touch the Xander Schauffele. Yeah,
I'm not touching me there. As we look, and I'm still, you know, I'm refreshing here. I'm not going to lie to you, refreshing the salary list, and we don't have that yet. Maybe one of the reasons we don't have the salaries is because DraftKings realized that they have to price teammates together, because if they don't price teammates together, it's just setting up to be absolutely atrocious. We're going to go with that. DK will do the right thing. They have done the right thing in the past in these situations, so I'm sure they will again, Jeff, as we move down a couple of more bets or a couple more teams to look at, of course, once salaries come in. So I'm going to ask a two-part question. One, tell me a team that you expect to be $7,500 or less that you are excited about clicking. Maybe it's one of the ones you've already used, like Keith Mitchell or Brant Snedeker, or maybe another one that you can find in that, say, 90 or 100-1 range, which is typically priced in the 7,500 to 7,000.
So 7,500 and under. Yeah, I could see Snedeker and Mitchell coming in under that, I think, if you're just looking at the odds.
Yep.
I threw out Uline and Werenski. I like that as well. I think, you know, if I had to guess, just again off the top of my head, they're probably gonna come in maybe even like in the 7K range, that Uline Werenski pairing. So
yeah, for sure. Maybe even lower.
I think those are both two ones we're kind of both interested in. And I think they're both be in that range, with Mitchell and Snedeker possibly coming in like right around that price, if I had to guess there too. You know, just looking in that range of teams. How much else to get excited about? Maybe Wyndham Clark, Erik van Ruin.
I was just gonna say it.
You want to dial up the variance right up to like 100 degrees. I mean, that is a team where they're either going like +4 in the first round or -12. So that range. I think we'll have a lot of teams like that. Again, like McNeely and Bramah going to be in there too. So
yeah, Max, I've got a team for you, my man. I can't believe you haven't said it yet.
What? Who?
One of your guys from last week that you love, Matty Neesmith.
With Chase Seifert.
And he's your guy with Chase Seifert tomorrow.
I was like, I mean, it's so perfect that they're best friends, obviously.
Yeah.
Because I always want to play them together. So it's like, in my mind, they were already best friends. And it just happened to manifest. I mean, I love this team. But unfortunately, neither guy can putt. So,
neither. Like,
So it's hard for me to click that name. I really like the one that Jeff brought up. Clark and Van Ruin. Like, EVR, like, why would he be friends with Wyndham Clark? It's just strange to me.
It does seem really strange. I thought about that, too. Like, how do they even know each other? This must be a random pairing one, because I don't know how they know each other.
Yeah, like, EVR feels like he would be, like, with Brandon Grace for, like, another South African
guy. Yeah, even Bezuidenhout, really. That would have been a good team.
Yeah, so, I really like that pairing just because Wyndham Clark can get so hot on the greens, and EVR is an amazing ball strike.
He definitely is. And I think it is definitely an intriguing team. There are certainly a couple of more names that we'll get into. And what I'm going to do is I'll transition into what we would call our DFS preview. And before we talk about each team now going forward, we're going to tell you the price that we expect. And again, we're going with the preface that DK is going to price the teammate at the exact same price. Please do that. Because there's no reason not to. I wish they would have just grouped them together and given us
choices. It's so much easier.
It just seems so much easier. Maybe the technology was harder to do. But in any case, let's start at the top. Rahm and Palmer are going to come in number one. I expect them to come in around 11,000. Cantlay Schauffele, 10-8, something around there. Who do you guys got as number three? Do you think it's going to be Morikawa and Broken Wolf? Or do you think it's going to be more like, say, Bubba Watson and Scotty Scheffler, who are both playing pretty well, Jeff? Where's your money going?
I think it's going to be Leishman's Cam Smith.
Oh, yeah, that's the other one.
So, oh, right.
Great
right.
call.
Cam Smith has the sort of course history bump here. So, and I think that'll lend a lot of people towards playing him as well. So, you know,
Leishman playing good too.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. So looking at these top teams, you know, Ron Palmer, 100% going to be the highest priced play. You know, and look, I think DraftKings is just trying. It's the first time they've done it. They're probably dotting their T's, crossing their I's, whatever. Just making sure they got everything right. And, you know, it's the first time they put it.
I totally understand. Yeah. Totally.
Oh, no, I do too. I mean, I'm trust me, I get as annoyed as anyone on Monday when the salaries don't come out. But I think Cam Smith Leishman will be number three. I think they'll get the course history bump. Like you said, I think Wolf, Bubba being a part of those four and five groups, they'll probably come in under. If I had to guess, Morikawa and Wolf still probably going to come in just under or around the same price as Cam Smith and Leishman, with Scheffler and Bubba kind of being number five.
Yeah, I totally agree with most of that, Max. As we move down the board just a little bit, I've got, you know, 9,600. I've got Tony Finau and Cam Champ slotted in there. I've got Ty Hatton and Danny Willett up there pretty high. And then it kind of, I think, maybe drops off a little bit. I'm going to say starting at about 9,200, we're going to get Billy Horschel, Sam Burns, Taylor Gooch, Max Homa. Anybody in that mid-range that you're interested in, or do you think that there's just not enough, say, firepower to pay 9,000 for Horschel and Burns?
I like the Horschel and Burns team. I think it makes sense. I think they complement each other pretty good. Like one guy good with irons, putter. The other guy drives the ball a mile. It's nice. I think it falls off really quick. I think like Rose and Stenson are going to get overpriced, and that's another team I'm not going to ever play, even though Rosie showed us something at the Masters, but
he did.
It's not a team where I would pick for really low scoring events where you have to go nuts on the greens to win. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think HV3 and Brendan Grace are going to be up there just because of HV3's performance.
And Grace has played pretty well this year too. So
I agree. Win,
Yep.
And then probably like Louis and Charles next. And then Streelman, Fratelli. I actually really like the Streelman Fratelli team. You guys tell me if you like that one. I think they complement each other well.
Yeah. Fratelli is one of those guys that can absolutely launch it off the tee now, has taken kind of that Bryson DeChambeau approach. We've talked about it on the show. Spot form last week, ended up not finishing well, but definitely had a couple of good rounds. Streelman, almost the exact same thing. So, Jeff, I'll pass that one to you, and I'll throw one more out there. Sungjae Im and Byung-Hun An. Maybe we would have rather seen Sungjae with Siwoo Kim, who's playing better and maybe a better setup for die courses. But Byung-Hun An was in the playoff in 2016 here that we referenced earlier. So, Jeff, I like the Sungjae Im Byung-Hun An team as well.
Yeah, I almost bet this one when it first came out and I started looking.
I had a feeling you might, yeah.
I came off because I just, you know, you're relying on Byung-Hun An to putt well for like 4 days. It's probably also, it's got some appeal, I think, for DFS. Not like my favorite group, though, ultimately. I think I actually prefer that for Telly Streelman as well. Two guys playing pretty solid. Like Streelman is solid tee to green. You know, I kind of like this format for a guy like him. It seems to take pressure off his putter a little bit. Doesn't have to sink like every three footer. I like that. And Fratelli, you know, you guys are right. I mean, he's a really explosive player who can certainly like light it up on his own. So I think this is a good pairing. Two guys are playing pretty strong as well. And again, you just compare them to like even Louis and Charles or Kirk and Todd. Like, why are Streelman and Fratelli, who, you know, both been playing just as good, like double the odds? So I like them as a target there. I know you guys touched on Burns and Horschel, but I think they're probably going to end up as a good starting point for like cash games or core lineups. Yeah. I love that pairing. It's so consistent. They're both really good putters. Horschel's got a fantastic track record here. So I think all things considered, we'll see where they end up in the salary, but if they're like the sixth or seventh most expensive team, Burns and Horschel should be, it might be chalky, but who cares? Like they're going to be a good core lineup.
Chalky shouldn't matter too much this week, given the fact that there's going to be so much variance. I think maybe the end up chalkiest team could end up winning. Who knows? Now, we got the NHL strategy show coming up right after this, just in about 60 seconds, Max. But I got a couple more I want to talk about before.
Let's do it.
We get on out of here. So, Tommy Lewis and Tommy Peters, the absolute ultimate upside GPP team, in my opinion. I'm only going to be rostering them there. That's a name that I had highlighted. And the other names that I had highlighted, I like Victor Hovland and Christopher Ventura, the Norwegian connection. Ventura is a guy that can get incredibly hot with the putter.
Yeah.
And we know Hovland stinks at it. So love that team. Max, how about your two other teams that you're looking at this week? And then we'll pave way for the strategy show.
So Tom Hoge and Bo Hostler is one I want to mention.
Okay. That's
another guy that can get on fire on the greens. And Hoagie's like
playing real good with his irons.
Irons right now.
Yep.
So that's one I like. It's slim pickings here. But another one I want to mention is Badia and Piercy.
Oh yeah, Piercy won here, that random win. Yeah.
Yep. And Piercy's another guy that's really strong with his irons, and Badia is really good with a putter. So that's the kind of teams I'm looking forward to this week.
Me too. And listen, we know that we're waiting for salaries, of course. So make sure you subscribe, because we'll be coming out with much more content when we get all that information available. Of course, I'll be on the airwaves with my buddy Ben Raza tomorrow afternoon. And then Ben's going to lock it all up with Eric Lindquist on Wednesday. So until next week, everybody, my home event at the Valspar. Maybe I'll even report from it if I can figure out the logistics. No promises, but I will have some content from the course. But until then, everybody, thanks for joining the PGA DFS First Look Show for the Zurich Classic, and good luck this week. Cheers.